presents Mormon Identities, a program about real Latter-day Saints as they live the restored gospel of Jesus Christ in the world today. The gospel shapes our identity and serves as a common thread in the other factors that help define who we are. We will explore these factors and discuss topics about our community and culture, scripture and doctrine, and life experiences and challenges. Mormon Identities, here on the Mormon Channel.
Welcome to Mormon Identities, a show about Latter-day Saints, who we are, what we believe, and how we live. I'm your host, Eric Huntsman, on the Mormon Channel, and today I'm very pleased to welcome as guests Susan Easton Black and Mary Jane Woodger for a special episode, Women of Faith and Devotion. Many of our listeners already know my guests. Both are professors in the Department of Church History and Doctrine at BYU. They both speak, teach, and write widely. Susan Easton Black is well known for her work in church history, particularly the prophet Joseph Smith, and Dr. Woodger has done quite a bit on David O. McKay as well as other figures. But what we'd like to do today is talk about women of faith and devotion. These are areas that both of my guests have researched and written quite a bit about. Recently, for instance, they wrote a book called Women of Character, Profiles of 100 Prominent LDS Women, and I would like to take advantage of the research they've done on that book and for other projects to talk about wonderful women, both well-known and not so well-known, who serve as models for us. And before we start talking about specific figures, I'd like to ask each of you, Mary Jane, let's start with you. You work on David O. McKay. You work on other topics. Clearly, you're interested in women, not just because you're a woman. I mean, what got you interested in this subject?
Well, I think one of the main reasons is because I teach at BYU, and often students, female students, would come to me and say, you know, Sister Woodger, there's not a lot of role models. There's not a lot of role models in the scriptures. There's not a lot written about women who have achieved success in the church. And there is a great need, a need for women to see other women who, I did it and so can you, and who exemplified those characteristics that women want to develop. And that was where my interest was. And I can't study a prophet, for instance, David O. McKay, without hitting Emma Raye and his mother.
Right,
they're just part of him. There's just no separation. And so I think that even when you study a prophet or someone in the church that is male, the females are right there equally yoked.
Thank you. Susan, what about you?
Okay, for me, being a woman, never wanted to be stereotyped as only able to write about women. So obviously for decades I've avoided the subject while building up my files.
Right.
And it's the same thing. Mary Jane indicated a lot of female students wanting to know more about other women, female role models. I've always thought I've been teaching his story for history.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a long time that her story be added to the compliment.
Well, let me just say, as a man, I really value hearing about women of faith and character and devotion because I learned so much from my grandmothers and my mother, and my wife drives my life in so many ways. But, you know, particularly I have a young daughter, and my daughter has actually asked this question that Mary Jane has asked. She's only 14 now, but a couple years ago she and I were reading the writings of Paul together. That's what you get when your dad teaches ancient scripture. And she said, what did Paul mean by that? Why did he say that about women? Why can't I speak in church? And I thought, I need to give Rachel models. And so at Mother's Day, but throughout the year, I think it's important for women and men to look for examples of women of faith and devotion. So let's talk about some wonderful figures. What I'd like to do this half hour we have together is talk about some important women from church history, perhaps some contemporary women, and then I'd actually like to talk about a few surprises, some women that may not be very well known. And then if we have time at the end of the episode, I'd like to talk about women in our own lives. Let's start with you, Mary Jane. Let's talk about a historical figure, if we can.
You know, one of my favorites that I knew very little about, only that she had been the first woman in a state legislature, was Martha Hughes Cannon. And I just very much connected with her. She comes across the plains as a 2-year-old And you see her going through some incredible hardships as she loses her father. At age 14, she's supporting herself as a school teacher. But, you know, for those, that generation that remembers Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, this is her. She all of a sudden decides, I want to become a doctor. So in 1875, she goes back to Michigan. She goes to medical school. And I could relate to her because she puts herself through school. She washes dishes. She's working as a secretary. And she graduates as a full-fledged M.D.
And then comes back to Utah.
Comes back to Utah, meets her husband, who is also a doctor. And she just made incredible strides with women and maternity and infant mortality. But one of the things I loved about her is all of a sudden she decides to run for Utah State Senator. And this is where most women in the country don't have the vote.
Let alone be able to run
for office. Yeah, but she runs for office. And who does she run against? Her husband.
Oh, Angus Cannon.
Yeah,
right?
So they run against each other. He's the Republican. She's the Democrat. And she wins. And I just think that is such a funny little part of Utah history. You've got a married couple running against each other, and the woman in the 1800s wins. Mm-hmm. But she, as a legislature, does remarkable things, again, to help women and health, and only serves one term. But she just, as you look at the history of health practices in Utah, she's the one that does incredible things. Mm-hmm. And you see all through it this wonderful independence that she's able to muster and develop as she tackles each situation in her life.
All right, Susan, let's turn to you. There are so many figures, but who is a woman you would like to tell us about from church history who is particularly inspiring to you?
Very inspiring to me was a woman named Mary Field Garner. She was the last surviving person to have known the prophet Joseph Smith. She actually lived 99 years after his martyrdom. She was born when Andrew Jackson was president of the United States and lived through 26 presidential administrations.
Wow.
She saw the beginning of the steamboats, the cotton gin, the reaper, and the telegraph, and she lived to use the telephone, electric lights, and the television. When asked if she had ridden in an airplane, she said that she would rather keep one foot on the ground. When Mary died, she was 107 years old. Her descendants numbered 465. She lived to welcome six generations of her own posterity, which numbered more than 600 descendants at her death.
You know, that's amazing because if you think about the fact she knew the prophet Joseph, and then she's around for, what, great-great-grandchildren, even more?
Definitely great-great-great.
But she, at least for those who are old enough for her to talk to, she could tell these children several generations down, I knew the prophet. I saw him. This wonderful idea of passing on personal testimony.
Okay, passing on personal testimonies. Actually, she became very famous in the West because when she was 10 years old, she had actually seen Joseph, knew who he was, and what I think was so incredible to me, as she outlives her own generation and beyond, and then her descendants, she always bore a powerful testimony that she knew that Joseph Smith was a prophet of God.
Mm-hmm. I think when Paul writes to Timothy, he says, I think of that faith that was first in your grandmother and then your mother. And I'm very moved by that, the idea that we all have the seeds of faith planted in us by someone. And so this is a wonderful thing we can reflect on in women in our own lives. Who are the ones who taught us? Who are the ones who testified to us? And she did that for many people, and we have people in our own lives. Any other figure either of you want to talk about in terms of church history before we move to some more recent figures, Mary Jane?
Well, I think along with longevity, as Susan just talked about, Mary Field Garner is an international woman that very few people probably know about. Her name was Lilia Wahahapa. And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but she is in Kauai when George Hugh Cannon comes. And she's one of the first converts of Elder Cannon. She helps translate the Book of Mormon into Hawaiian. But the amazing thing about her is she's born 26 years before Abraham Lincoln. She goes through, 27 U.S. presidents. But she is, at the age of 58, called as a Relief Society president. She's not released until she's 96.
Oh, my goodness. This is like those bishops that are in for 30 years or something.
And you know, they talk about her in her 100th year still being able to read the Bible without glasses. I'm thinking I need to go to Hawaii and figure out what she was doing. But
well, and didn't I read that she walked to church week, even when she's like 104?
Yeah, it's just amazing. So you have her dying after Pearl Harbor. She is almost the entire church history on that island, mm-hmm. and becomes such an incredible stalwart of testimony. And you just see her running through missionary experiences and just an amazing woman.
Mm-hmm. Susan?
Okay, for me, a real standout has been Drusilla Hendricks. Her husband, during the time when the extermination order was going on, he's been shot, pretty much paralyzed from the waist down. She has several children. She supports her husband and the family. Finally, she gets herself to Iowa, and the announcement is it's time to organize the Mormon Battalion. And her oldest son, who's 16, he'd actually like to join, and she's refusing it. But she describes that she goes out alone by herself to wonder about this decision. And she hears a voice that says to her, "Be you afraid to trust in the God of Israel? Has he not been with you in all of your trials? Has he not provided for your wants?" She also heard a voice ask, "If I did not want the greatest glory," she answered, "I did." "Then how can you get it without making the greatest sacrifice?" asked the voice. Upon answering, "Lord, what lack I?" the voice said, "Let your son go with the battalion."
Wow.
And so a young son who was not even bona fide military age goes out there and marches with the battalion. And after he marches with the battalion, he comes back to get his mother and his father and the rest of the children and to take them onto the Salt Lake Valley. Her faith, her courage in the midst of huge trials, few match.
You know, when my wife was reading some of the things you've written here and elsewhere about women of faith and devotion, she said, you know, she was stirred by these examples because so many of these women had it so tough. Here's a woman supporting her quadriplegic husband for decades before he dies and all the challenges people have. And then Elaine said, but you know, almost every woman has that experience where there are things in their lives that they just have to work hard and fight for. And I think that's good for us to remember. That's why these figures are inspiring to us, I think.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode, Women of Faith and Devotion, here on Mormon Identities. We're talking to Susan Easton Black and Mary Jane Woodger. If you'd like to download this episode as a podcast, go to mormonchannel.org, where you can download our episodes or other programs on the Mormon Channel. Let's now talk about women from a later period, either current women — it's a little harder to talk about people when they're still alive, of course — or from the last century. Mary Jane, who's someone that stands out to
you? One of my favorites is Rosemary Reed, and I don't know if that's a name that will ring true with the current generation, but she is known as being a fashion designer. And she grows up sewing next to her mother and starts taking swimming lessons, falls in love with her teacher, and he decides he doesn't like his swimsuit. Now, I can't believe this, but they used to make swimsuits out of wool.
Oh, my goodness.
And she designs a new swimsuit for him and begins designing for others. And she actually sees the path that she could really become a swimsuit designer, goes to Heavenly Father and says, "How do you feel about me making swimsuits?" And she gets the affirmative, "Yeah, do it." She becomes the number one fashion designer. She designs for stars. Marilyn Monroe said she was as much responsible for her being a pinup as Mother Nature. She just is incredible. And, you know, sisters, as you wear swimsuits, it's her that developed all those things that are a blessing in swimsuits. But the amazing thing to me about her is when push came to shove in the 70s and the bikini came on the scene, she absolutely refused to design bikinis, and she kind of lost her business because of
it. But she kept her standards.
But she took a stand, and it made a big difference in people's lives.
You know, I'm glad you shared her example, because I think sometimes in our zeal to have outstanding women who are inspirational, I think we can overcompensate. And unless they're a doctor or a lawyer or a politician, they're not important. But here's a woman who did something that was fairly traditional in terms of women's roles for
sure.
the time.
Sure.
Made a go of it, was a success at it, but in a very real way was able to be a positive influence for good because of her feelings about modesty. Susan, absolutely. What about you?
Okay, for me, it's the King sisters. You get a father, this William King Driggs, that's living during the time of the Depression. He'd been a professor of music and a voice teacher in Colorado, let go looking for how to support himself and his family. And he came up with the idea, I'll take my daughters on the road. Traveled all over the place and finally settling in the Oakland area. And for these young girls, they would do broadcasts via the radio and would earn $25 a week. And this would then support the entire family. The King sisters went on to win the Heart of America. They were at a time when you had the Glenn Miller big bands. They actually took a version of the Glenn Miller hit In the Mood and put themselves on the map. They would fill huge auditoriums from Pasadena to New York City. Eventually, they were the singing group of World War II. And they were on many army bases, singing to the troops. And I guess what I especially like about it, in all their fame and prominence that came their way as they traveled, for them, family was always first. And you see that wherever they were, and it's family, it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's kind of like they grew up poor. Obviously, wealth will be their way as they came and go, but they never forgot their roots, despite the fact they're a household name literally throughout the world.
Who's another figure that's important to you, Mary Jane?
You know, one of the because I'm in the primary right now, one of my favorites is Janice Kapp Perry, who, of course, is very much alive. And one of the things that I love about her is her explanation of how to prepare to be creative. Here she was, a two-year-old prodigy. You know, she told me that she, at 2 years old, could play by ear. Now, I'm trying to picture that, but that is amazing to me. But growing up and as a teenager, as a young woman, even a young woman into her 30s, she really, music wasn't her thing. It was sports. And the Lord kind of has to take a little tragedy. She breaks her ankle and can no longer play the way she used to and play sports. And the bishop asks her to do a road show, and that's the beginning.
Really?
But
so
those,
riding that road show
yeah,
is where she...
Yeah, absolutely. But those words that go through all of our minds and go through little primary children's minds, you know, where is heaven? And, Lord, are you there? Do you hear my prayer? Those incredible phraseologies that she has woven into the Mormon texture of music is amazing.
Susan?
Okay. For me, you know, prophets' wives. And one of the ones that was a real standout for me was Camilla Kimball. She was a homemaker. But at one point, when people asked Camilla how she felt about being married to a prophet, she liked to say, I didn't marry a prophet, I married a returned missionary. Of her husband, she said, he was always completely dedicated to the church, and it has been that way in our married life since the beginning. He would have been just as devoted if he were a ward clerk. And I like that about her. I saw her supportive of her husband, yet at the same time advancing her own talents. Mm-hmm. From the time she was a child, she liked to read, she liked flowers, she liked everything about the home, and she loved her husband. And, wow, she's always just been an amazing role model.
Since you talk about wives with presidents of the church, I can't help but think of Marjorie Pei Hinckley. You know, talk about help meet some people who are suitable for each other. I mean, as quick-witted as President Hinckley was, Sister Hinckley could keep up with him. And I remember her quipping, you know, what's it like to be married to a prophet? And says, well, he leaves his pants on the ground or over the chair like anybody else. But you actually tell a wonderful story in some of your research and writing about this, that at one point he was, I don't know if getting cold feet, but he took her out to lunch before they got married and said, I only have $150. And her response is, well, that's great. That's more than I thought you had or something. So that's a wonderful story. There's a, once again, living figure that I've always been kind of inspired and tickled by, Mary Ellen Edmonds, who's known by a lot of women is a very popular and inspiring speaker, and many of us know about her wonderful attitude towards life. But I didn't know much about her history, about her work with, I guess it was Health Service Mission or something in the Philippines. Susan, what do you know about Sister Edmonds?
For her, she's your continual missionary. You see her after graduating from the College of Nursing in 1962. She received a mission call to the Southern Far East, which she interpreted to mean Florida. And so for her, she and her companions were the first sister missionaries to serve in the Philippines, where she said they entered homes without electricity, indoor toilets, even toilet papers. And she described loving that experience. She then went on a second mission to the Philippines Manila Mission in 1972-73. And upon returning home, she became the coordinator of health missionaries for the church until a third mission took her to Indonesia in 1976.
Wow.
So here's a woman that, you know, she got amazing talents, nursing talents, and found reasons to serve three missions, even as a younger person. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's wonderful, a great friend.
And, you know, not a wife or a mother, but very active and very engaged and blessing lots and lots of people's lives.
Very active, very engaged, and a wonderful personality. Always sees the glass full.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what circumstances are thrown at her, to her.
Mary Jane, would
you
like
to share more? I've really enjoyed some of the younger women that we have written about. We've got some incredible athletes. Tora Bright, who is an Olympian, and how much during the Olympics she just stood forward and said, you know, I am LDS. Mm-hmm. And those around her picked up on that very quickly, that there was a difference in her. And I look at a young woman from American Fork. Her name might not be as familiar as some of the others, but her name's Chelsea Rippey. And she was taking her daughter to shop and couldn't find any clothes that were attractive and modest at the same time. So what does she do? She develops a whole clothing line of shirts that are longer and more modest, and it's called Shade Clothing, and she originally does it out of her garage, and all of a sudden, you know, within a year, it's a multi-million dollar organization. So we see in this next generation coming up, well, I shouldn't say coming up, they're there, but incredible Latter-day Saint women who have been raised in the church and who really represent those great qualities that we espouse, Latter-day Saints have.
Well, let's end our visit today by talking about some things a little closer to home, not necessarily other women in other people's lives, but some of the women in our own lives. Susan, are there one or two people in your life that you'd like to tell us about who've been inspirations to you, strengths to you?
Sure. You know, almost every woman that walks by, right. You know, you can pick something up. But I'm a mother of all sons, so you realize I then look back to my mom. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the things that was the most inspiring to me when she was 78 years old and all the children were out of the home, and you'd say she could spend her life cruising on cruise ships or whatever she wanted to do. She was called as a young women's president of her ward. And I saw her go from, how can I possibly do this? Will they like me? To herself putting on a bathing suit and doing a jackknife off a diving board into a pool as the kids surrounded her. And they loved her, and she loved them. And she would always call them my girls.
And she was a wonderful support to you, wasn't she?
She was an incredible support to me. You know, I could call her anytime, night or day, and it just seemed like it was the happiest moment in her day.
Of course, one of the wonderful things is that frequently as our parents age, we get to return the favor. You know, they raised us when we were helpless children, babies. And sometimes as our parents get older, they need to be taken care of.
Right. My mom lived in my home for years. And it was a great blessing to myself and my family.
Mm-hmm. Mary Jane, who are some of the women important?
I would have to come back to my mother also. I remember a conversation I had with my father one time after we had heard Elder Maxwell talk, and he pulled me aside and he said, I want you to listen to me. He said, you need to understand that before I met your mother, I didn't have any confidence. And I was amazed at that statement by my father. I thought he had confidence to a fault. I don't know how my mother did it, but there was something about her that she instilled confidence. Mm-hmm. And in an amazing way. And I'm grateful for her because I always felt I could do whatever I needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a wonderful thing to think about. You know, not everyone has an opportunity to be a wife or a mother, but we all have mothers. And I know that not all the time are families totally functional, and not everyone's had a perfect example or experience with a mother. But we have mothers, or we have mother figures in our lives. Are there any women in your life who weren't necessarily related to you who served that way, Mary Jane?
Well, she's not a mother, but I'm sitting with a person who's had great influence upon me. And when we did this book, I said, Susan, we need to put you in. I don't know if she remembers this, but years ago, my friend and I came and sat in her office and said, we want to be you, which is ridiculous that anyone could. And she has mentored me from day one in an amazing way.
That's a wonderful example of how you can nurture. You say you use the term mentored.
Absolutely.
Susan, what about you?
Okay. For me, there's a woman that lives now in St. George whose name is Lynn Russin that was married to John Russin before his death. And, Lynn has served mission after mission. She was a temple matron of the St. George Temple. And I go to St. George, and now she's 90. Mm-hmm. And when I always go to visit Lynn, and she always has something positive to say. And she always has, I'm there for you. And wow. We need to, as women, embrace each other, as we function in life. I've always thought, the strength of any woman, it's kind of like the strength is in the blend. Mm-hmm. I have one talent, somebody has another, but, when you combine efforts and you reach out and help others, it's amazing. What women and men can do together, it's phenomenal.
It's interesting that you've both picked women who were your seniors. I think that wonderful Carl Bloch painting of Elizabeth greeting Mary, and you've got this older woman stretching out her arms to the younger woman. And a lot of times in the church we talk about transitioning from Young Women's Relief Society and the strength there is for an older woman or man to reach out and mentor a younger woman or man. And draw them in and be a father figure. When my father died, I took to sending a Father's Day card every year to someone else. And, my mission president the first time and later just men who made a difference in my life. And so I think at Mother's Day and throughout the year, it's wonderful to reflect on the women. Mary Jane, you talked about how your mother gave your father confidence. I think of my own wife. People sometimes, how did you and Lang get together? You're so different. And, I used to feel like I had to make a laundry list of, she does X, Y, and Z. And finally I learned, I simply said, because she loves me and I love her. And regardless of the relationship, whether it's mother, daughter, or husband, wife, or parent, child, or friend, friend, or mentor, to student, I think there are wonderful examples of women that we can all draw upon, women of faith and devotion who make us better and can inspire us. Susan and Mary Jane, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Mormon Identities, where we've been talking about women of faith and devotion. And thank you, listeners, for joining us for this episode of Mormon Identities, where we've been talking about who we are as Latter-day Saints, who we are, what we believe, and how we live. Remember that today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad.
You've been listening to Mormon Identities here on the Mormon Channel. To download or podcast this episode, please click on our homepage, radio.lds.org.